From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 165 of Little Brother for the 30th of November, 2025. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com, but either way, let's get started. The U.S. Public Interest Research Group has released its annual Trouble in Toyland report on dangerous toys for the upcoming Christmas shopping season. What makes this interesting this year is a particularly long section of this report that focuses on AI-powered toys. AI is capable of gathering and collating a lot of information into manageable chunks, but it lacks a moral compass. And so it is that we find that some AI toys were able to provide children upon request with advice on where to find things like knives or matches and how to use them, and to discuss sexual fetishes with them in a frank and casual manner. Of course, as you might expect, these toys are also a privacy nightmare because the AI computational requirements are too great to be battery-powered. The toys do their thinking in the cloud. I'll include a link to the report in the program notes. Anyone who listened to episode 53 some years ago has heard my position on VPNs and how the primary outcome in most cases is just to move where you've put your trust from your internet provider to your VPN provider. However, far be it from me to suggest that you should not use one if it addresses your specific threat model. That said, lawmakers in Wisconsin and Michigan think it's a good idea to ban them. This came about as a result of laws in those states that require age verification, including positive identification with government ID, to use certain adult websites. The natural response is for people to use a VPN to appear to be from someplace else, so the legislatures now want to completely ban VPNs. This is, of course, a privacy nightmare and will also have a negative impact on businesses, particularly those that provide remote access to some or all employees. In a recent response to foreign state actors and others taking potshots at the nation's critical infrastructure, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, had published a set of rules in January that would attempt to bolster the telecom industry's cybersecurity. In response to lobbying from the industry, these rules have now been rolled back. What could possibly go wrong? The Press Democrat, the daily newspaper in Santa Rosa, California, is reporting that 8 security personnel have been let go from healthcare provider Kaiser Permanente for their part in a scandal involving accessing personal data from a company database. In one case, this actually ended a career of 2 decades. The attorney for the accused is, of course, asserting that their clients are innocent, as one does. Finally, Windows Central is reporting that the retirement of Windows 10 has caused a spike in downloads for Zorin OS, a Linux distribution based on Ubuntu. I imagine others as well. Windows 11 has some firm system requirements that have made some existing hardware obsolete as Windows hardware, most notably the need for a trusted platform module. Like Windows 10, Xorian and some other Linux distributions have the ability to utilize a trusted platform module if it's present, but they do not actually require it for installation and operation. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Here are the security alerts for this fortnight. We have one important item this episode, and I ask that you please listen carefully because I have seen some heated debate regarding this for no apparent reason. The target of this attack is Signal Private Messenger. However, and this is important, Signal is not the vulnerability. It also applies to WhatsApp and to Telegram. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, are warning that multiple threat actors are using commercial spyware to target the users of Signal and other secure mobile messaging apps. The attacks take three forms. The first is a phishing attack, which may include a device-linking QR code to compromise the victim by linking their account to attacker-owned devices. The second is a zero-click attack, in which the victim's device is attacked directly in a way that doesn't require user interaction, and the third is to flat-out impersonate the app. From the CISA Bulletin, quote, "Evidence suggests these cyber actors focus on high-value individuals, such as current and former high-ranking government, military, and political officials, as well as civil society organizations and individuals across the United States, Middle East, and Europe," end quote. CISA provides a mobile communications best practices guide, and I will link to it in the program notes. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time. We have two today. One of the companies you've never heard of is called Citus AMC. They have no Wikipedia entry. Their website describes what they do as being, quote, "The leading provider of investment advisory, outsourcing, talent, and technology solutions to the commercial and residential real estate finance industries," end quote. It continues, quote, "We are trusted by top banks, private equity firms, asset managers, residential originators and servicers, CMBS, RMBS issuers, and insurance companies to identify and capture opportunities in their business through innovative solutions that drive operational efficiency, increase business effectiveness, and improve market agility," end quote. Well, they were trusted. According to an article in the New York Times, Citus AMC were the subject of a cyber attack on November 12th, and that they've been working with the FBI between then and now to figure out what damage has occurred. I will point out that is an exceptionally fast response. As anyone who's listened to this podcast for any length of time is well aware, attacks and pwns happen quite frequently in the business world, but this one has the potential to be quite nasty because, like the one for Change Healthcare some while ago, another company that you'd never heard of until you did, Citus AMC holds a trove of information that was entrusted to them on our behalf by multiple sources that we trusted, and it's hard not to get hit with some of the shrapnel. The other story I have comes from the Houston Chronicle, who are reporting that waste management company Waste Management found themselves in the middle of a tech nightmare. where a disgruntled former contractor gained access to the company's network and reset about 2,500 passwords, causing lockouts across the country. He gained entry to the facilities by posing as another contractor and then deployed a PowerShell script to do the damage, costing the company over $800,000, including recovery efforts. He has agreed to plead guilty and will be serving a 10-year sentence and may also owe fines up to $250,000. So, I know a lot of my listeners have a mischievous streak, as do I, but that is a lot of fuck-up for one story. The ex-contractor who did this was being stupid, and I want to be absolutely clear about that. He had been let go 4 years before executing this attack, and he needed to let go over being let go and move the fuck on. Don't harbor a vendetta, especially against a former employer. It's not worth it, it's not worth the mental real estate it takes up, and it's not worth what you might do if you get the opportunity. But waste management also fucked up here. There should not have been any set of credentials available to him that would have gotten him into a machine once he got into the facility that he also should not have been able to get into in the first place. Never mind a set of credentials that would have gotten him administrative privileges. That said, I do know that some businesses, even very large ones, will often have very powerful privileges attached to well-known and simple passwords. And it's a ticking time bomb waiting for somebody who can't let go on a vendetta. I have some infrastructure news, but you know what? I'm going to play my fail of the Fortnite music for this one. Unless you have been living under a rock, you no doubt noticed that there was something fundamentally wrong with the internet on Monday the 18th. At the heart of the problem was a company called Cloudflare. Cloudflare, according to Wikipedia, is, quote, an American company that provides a range of internet services, including content delivery network services, cybersecurity, DDoS mitigation, wide area network services, reverse proxies, domain name service, ICANN accredited, and domain registration, end quote. Yes, that's the wording. I'm sorry. It is what it is. What's particularly noteworthy here is their reverse proxy service, which provides the mechanism for their cybersecurity service. One of the features of their cybersecurity service is those lovely CAPTCHAs that grace so many websites. For those not familiar with the word CAPTCHA, it's spelled C-A-P-T-C-H-A, and it stands for Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart. You know, those boxes that show up from time to time that make you do something like select all of the pictures of traffic lights or type in the letters that you see in this distorted image. Those are designed to block bots from accessing the site by setting a challenge that a human can do but a computer cannot. But Cloudflare are pretty smart about it. Most of the time, all you've got to do with sites that go through them is put a check mark in a box, and that sets off a bunch of tests in the background that go looking for characteristics that might indicate that a request came from a bot rather than from a human. And it doesn't go on to the actual test unless something looks off. This is brilliant because it's not a big imposition on legit human users, and most of the time, you just put a check in the box and you gain access. So how does that work? Well, obviously, the exact details are going to be a trade secret. But it seems like they are using an old-school AI called a Bayes classifier to figure it out. They have a list of about 60 features that they look for. When they see them, they tend to imply that the user might be a bot and should be challenged more aggressively. Exactly what those features are and exactly how many there are is going to be constantly in flux as the landscape changes over time. So what happened is that service broke down. As is often the case, a software update was the trigger. Cloudflare uses a database called ClickHouse, which is essentially an open-source SQL database optimized for analytics, and so it is perfect for the task at hand, in theory. Now, Cloudflare had a query that they ran against their ClickHouse database that would generate a list of features to be distributed to their bot detectors. As written, there was a detail not specified in the query. On the old version of the ClickHouse engine, the ClickHouse software constrained its results to one particular database, default. And under the new version, the query, as written, would return results from all databases served by that particular cluster. Now, this is not as bad as you might think it could be. Instead of around 60 features, they got around 240 because there were four databases. But that was enough. You see, if they had specified the database, they would have gotten a correct result. So that's one thing, and probably the most correct one that could have prevented this. But a second possibility is that they had put a limit of, 200 results on the query. It would still be a wrong result, but it wouldn't be lethal. But why did this happen? Well, the file that was produced by the query would be distributed to the bot detectors. For performance reasons, the memory allocation in the bot detectors was static. That means that when the program started, it would go and it would grab a specific number of memory slots in which it could store features that the bot detectors would look for. And that number, a number that would have been absolutely plenty for most legit situations, was 200. When faced with a list of features that exceeded that limit, the program crashed. I'm going to be an old man yelling at the cloud for a minute. Back when the internet started to make an appearance in everyday life, when most users dialed in using a telephone landline to get to the internet, there was a kind of an underlying promise to the internet as a whole. The idea was that the internet would connect us directly to one another, that servers would spring up on college campuses and in corporate data centers, and to a lesser degree in the homes of hobbyists. Now, certainly, nothing actually stops this pattern from evolving. You're listening to this podcast, which is delivered by way of a mostly independent infrastructure. Amazon's got no part of it, nor Microsoft, nor Cloudflare. The folks running the show at the Helix Foundation, where the podcast is hosted, do so out of an ideological drive to carve out and maintain ownership over a little slice of the internet. However, there's a lot of bandwagon jumping going on, which throws a wrench in the works. Essentially, what happens is this. A company comes along that can do a thing that you, as a website owner, have been doing for yourself. The thing is a pain in the ass, or it's expensive, or both. So you outsource it to them. Others see how well that's working, and they follow you there. Let me give you an example. Maintaining a data center is expensive. Maintaining servers in the data center is a lot of work. Getting that data center someplace useful where it has good connectivity, also expensive. Having a backup someplace else, yeah, you just doubled that expense. But what if, rather than 100 companies running 200 expensive data centers, one company was to build two or more big ones and rent out space for a lot less than the cost of setting all of these up? Well, from a business perspective, it would make perfect sense for the other 99 companies to rent space from that one. This is not hypothetical. Companies like Amazon, Microsoft, and Cloudflare offer services that fall into exactly that pattern. They do something that individual organizations may not wish to maintain themselves. Now, I'm going to say that I don't know the answer to this question, but I feel like it needs to be asked. At what point have we outsourced too much? At what point have we gone too far in allowing a small number of companies to basically gatekeep the entire fucking internet? The Cloudflare outage reminds us of just how important and how vulnerable are some of these companies that most people have never heard of. The profound irony that even Down Detector, a site whose job is to tell you when things are down on the internet, was itself down because of the Cloudflare outage. And that's kind of amusing at first, but it points out that through centralization, we have not just made infrastructure more efficient to run, but we have also made it more efficient to knock it the fuck down. Another fortnight has gone by, which means it's time to talk about Flock security again. I have four items on this topic, so let's go. 404 Media is reporting something that I will tell you didn't surprise me at all. It seems like Thomson Reuters, a company best known for being a press agency, but which is also a data broker, offered a product where users of Flock's cameras and possibly others can now not just track vehicles that pass by the cameras, but can also immediately pull up and correlate a vehicle to the license of its owner, that person's credit information, marriage records, voter registration, property ownership. All of this information is stuff that would be easily acquired, mind you. Some of it's public, some of it's for sale, but all of it is available. What's new is that it's now all presented in one neat little package. Now, I used to work as what was called a data mining analyst, and most of my day in, day out was linking databases together, so nothing about this surprises me at all. Anyway, interestingly enough, we'll move on to the second item. It seems like the Flock cameras might be vulnerable in a few ways. It's my belief that most of these cameras are made by Motorola, and since they incorporate the ability to talk to a cellular network, you might have the expectation that perhaps they run Android. Well, this, according to security researcher John Gaines, would be a correct expectation. It seems as though the cameras in question have, as most mobile devices do, Wi-Fi, as well as cellular capability, and they will happily connect to an access point if one comes within range with the correct SSID and configuration. Gaines indicated that the longest wait time in doing this was actually waiting for the hotspot to come online. Gaines made these revelations on Ben Jordan's YouTube channel and also reported these vulnerabilities to the manufacturer. He has apparently been sacked since then, suggesting that you need to be careful about reporting fires lest you get accused of arson. All that said, it seems like there is a way to interfere with these devices and that the maker intends to do fuck all to fix it. So, I mean, that's good. Moving on to Post and Kill New York, a place that probably some of you have never even heard of. Post and Kill is a rural town, about 4,300 residents, smack in the middle of Rensselaer County. Yes, we actually do have little places like this in New York State. The county sheriff's department is eyeing the idea of placing Flock cameras throughout the town. In particular, they appear to be working with local convenience store chain Stewart's, according to reporting from our local NPR affiliate, WAMC. Now, on one hand, this serves as an important reminder that you can't escape Big Brother, even by going to a small town. He's fucking everywhere. On the other hand, one of my listeners has pointed out that this is kind of pointless, that they could just dispatch a cruiser to the local Stewart's, write down all the plates on the cars that they find there, and come back a week later to find it unchanged. It's just all the locals going for coffee. But how about some good news? In San Jose, California, the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the American Civil Liberties Union have just filed suit against the San Jose Police Department, alleging that the use of records generated by Flock security cameras constitute a warrantless search. The warrantless part of the question is pretty clear and obvious. Every car that passes by one of these cameras may have its plate read, so there is a record of it having been there, regardless of whether or not there's any suspicion that the car was involved in any criminal activity. Mostly what needs to be done here is to prove to the court that this constitutes a search, and then this whole Big Brother scheme may finally start to unravel. I wish them the greatest of luck. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. You didn't think that just because I had a big fail in the spotlight that I was gonna not do this, did you? AI is wonderful stuff, until it isn't. Various artificially intelligent technologies have been helping us for about two decades now with things like sorting our mail, suggesting things that go together, letting us know about movies we might like, translating unfamiliar languages to familiar ones, and so on. In recent years, though, AIs have become creative, which is what has made the general public aware of them. Large language models, a specific subtype of AI, have been able to take our words and turn them into passable written paragraphs, maybe a hair bland at times, but often helpful, and into sounds, videos, and images. We are not, however, at the point yet where you can, as Ron Popeil might say, set it and forget it. Any work produced by an AI should be proofread, listened to, watched, examined with a critical eye. We should treat that work that the machines produce like it was the work of a human worker who is just learning the craft. And as I said earlier, has no moral compass. The reason you need to do this is on clear display on the Kingston Riverside in England. There, you can find a Christmas mural. At first glance, the mural, over 100 feet wide, appears to be a scene painted in the general style of renowned Dutch painter Peter Bruegel. As long as you don't look too far into the details. When you do look into the details, however, it looks less like Bruegel and more like Lovecraft. There are strange mutations of dogs into chickens, faces coming out of people's chests, a log that morphs into a dog's paw as you follow from one end to the other. Probably the most salient element is an absolutely horrified-looking Santa Claus. The term that has been used to describe this type of thing is AI slop, when an AI is used to create a thing and nobody checks its work. This mural should have been rejected while it was still an image on a computer screen long before it was ever printed. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Julie Bernstein, Eric Rosales, Fungaboo, Edward Cady, Azrael, and Thriller at Play for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 166 will drop on the 14th of December. Stay safe and be well.